Okay, we're going to get started. Welcome everybody to this session on Occupational Health Disparities Institute. This is part of the Institute within our program. There's a series on health disparities, and this session is on addressing issues of minority and immigrant workers, and we have a great lineup of speakers. A couple things. One is you may have noticed APHA now asks that each speaker have a slide and disclose whether they have any conflict of interest involved, and none of the speakers do, so they all have permission to just blow right past that slide. And secondly, before I forget, I want to mention that the section is asking people to give feedback about which sessions you particularly like this year, what ideas you have for sessions next year, and so on the back table in the golden rod, you'll find these. So please pick one up and at some point fill it out and turn it in to us, okay? And as you'll see in the agenda, we have 15 minutes for each speaker. If they go less than 15 minutes, there'll be times for a question or two. If they take their full 15 minutes, we'll hold the questions or comments until the end, because there is a half hour reserved at the end for discussion. And so that we get into this quickly, so we really have that time for rich discussion at the end, I want to introduce our first speaker, who is Mariela Alarcón Yo, did I say it right? And she has been with the directors of health education and health promotion for 6 years. Before that, she worked with the National Council of La Raza and the National Safety Council developing programs in the areas of asthma, immunizations, breast and cervical cancer for the Hispanic community. So, Mariela.
My handouts are in the back of the room if you'd like to pick one up if you haven't yet. The title of my presentation is Voices Unheard, Job Stress Among Hispanic Female Blue-Collar Workers in the U.S. Just to give you a little background, there goes that slide. Since 1996, the number of Hispanics in the labor force has increased 62%. That's about 13 million Americans to nearly 21 million Americans in 2006. These women comprise about 5% of the total labor force, which is about 8 million working Americans. And they also comprise a notable proportion of the blue-collar workforce and are more likely to have blue-collar occupations than other groups of women. As greater numbers of women enter the workforce, the risk for stress also rises. Women working in low-paying jobs often have to deal with time pressures, job insecurities, and gender discrimination. Furthermore, these women work in traditionally female occupations, such as food service, often working in very monotonous conditions that have been shown to increase stress. These women also report high levels of stress as a result of very little control or decision-making power relative to women in other occupations. And of course, they struggle, like we do too, balancing work and family life. Now, Hispanic Latino women face many of the same stresses as other women, but also face additional strains and stress due to discrimination, lack of social support, and language barriers. Now, building upon the first round of our Worksite Health Project, in which we examined stress more broadly among blue-collar workers, the CDC contracted with our organization, Directors of Health Promotion and Education, to conduct a second round of focus groups to specifically look at the impact and the sources of stress among Hispanic Latino women. So we really wanted to treat this study as an examination of job stress among Hispanic Latino women to bring focus to their experiences within the workplace in hopes of elevating their voices to a point where they're more audible and possibly change can begin. So the purpose of our study was really fourfold. We wanted to look at the sources of stress that are unique to these women. We wanted to look at the impact of stress, what are some of their coping strategies, and what are their program needs, really coming from them. What is it they need to reduce the stress in their lives? Now, quickly on the methods, we partnered with three community-based organizations, each conducted two focus groups in Fresno, California, in Lexington, Nebraska, and Columbia, South Carolina. And we conducted a pilot here in Washington, D.C. to test the utility of all the focus group tools. Each of the focus groups had 7 to 8 participants. We gave specific criteria to our community-based organizations. Of course, they had to be female, Hispanic, Latina ethnicity, currently employed full-time, current position for at least 1 year, and employed in a blue-collar job. And all project materials and focus groups were administered in Spanish. Okay, on the next two slides, we're going to be presenting some of our findings, and we're going to start with the sources of stress. Difficult and dangerous work environments. First, just to mention, roughly half of the women who participated in the focus groups were in a factory setting. An additional 20% were in a janitorial capacity or worked as maids, and the balance were childcare workers or cashiers. Though many of these women noted that their jobs were easy and simple, they cited frustration with their jobs being really physically taxing. Whether it was getting the bones out of chicken or washing laundry or welding or baking, most of the participants were engaged in work that had them on their feet all day, had very little to no break or lunch. I'll be reading just some of the quotes for you. For me, the hardest part is the ongoing kneading of the dough to make the flour for the tortillas from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Now, some of the participants also worked in jobs that were dangerous due to the use of machinery, and they were not trained appropriately and were at risk of injury. And in a few instances, based on their workplace accidents that they had observed, the women worried that they would not have insurance or workman compensation if they got injured. Powerlessness and lack of control is also something that really increased this stress, and they voiced considerable frustration with their supervisors. In particular, women stressed by the way they were treated by their supervisors. Many recalled circumstances in which the supervisors shouted, insulted them, and singled them out for criticism. And participants felt that supervisors often pressured them to work quicker and faster, and they relayed frustration with wanting to do a good job and being expected to do a good job, but not being given the appropriate tools, a good sharp pair of scissors or knives. Especially the women in the factory settings reported their supervisors frequently told them that they were replaceable. If one complains, they threaten to fire you. They tell you that if you go today, there are four who are waiting at the door to work. Participants also reported inflexible schedules and last-minute deadlines were sources of significant stress. Some stated that they were responsible not only for their own job and designated tasks, but also for those of others if there were staffing shortages. And then the supervisors allowed this unequal distribution of workloads and failed to adjust for performance expectations. And this, of course, in turn made the women very vulnerable to reprimand by their supervisors. So these competing demands on their time, the lack of managerial support, left many of the participants feeling very stressed and powerless. In 1 hour, I have to make 400 rolls by myself, and at the same time, I am given another responsibility of straightening out the refrigerator or overseeing the trucks that have the merchandise that I have to organize. Beyond conflicts with the supervisors, some participants described competitive work environments in which little teamwork or collaboration existed and favoritism was commonplace. Participants reported feeling disempowered and thus regularly stressed as a result of conflicts with coworkers. At work, my supervisor says, "What happened? You don't move fast enough. Look at Esther. She moves quickly." I tell him, "Look at Esther. She's 22 and I'm 50. Compare us." Many of the women also felt stressed from the amount of their paycheck. It was never enough to pay the bills. And in some cases, a lot of these women did not know in advance how much their paycheck was going to be because they didn't know how many hours they're going to be working in that week. And they felt further frustration with their employers because they didn't feel fairly compensated for their work, either feeling shortchanged on breaks or lunches, or much larger examples of the employer's supervisors not meeting their contracts. In the contract, it says that after 3 months, you should get a raise. But now they make people work 6 months before they get their raise. You know what it's like to work for six months at $6 an hour. Now, discrimination. Sometimes these women tie their experience to language barriers, but others noted that not having their legal papers or being Hispanic was the cause for being very often disrespected. It is almost like being in boot camp with all the yelling, the way they make a person feel, humiliated for being Hispanic more than anything. Another quote, I work in a restaurant washing dishes, but they overload me with work just because I don't have legal documents, social security, yet they give you more work, heavier work. And another interesting one was, of course, transportation. Getting to work proved to be very stressful for many of these women. They noted that public transportation was infrequent, but when they did have to take the bus, they'd have to run to get the bus, and sometimes they'd miss the bus and have to wait an hour for the bus. Again, many of these women were undocumented, so they didn't have a license, so they ran the risk of being stopped by a police and either getting deported or sent to jail. Immigration security also was a great stress for the many of these women because they lacked a visa or naturalization papers that permitted for them to work in the U.S. legally. And they felt that all these additional pressures, noting that jobs were limited for those who were not documented. And in some cases, these women felt that their immigration status forced them to work at jobs dealing with very difficult employers that others would not tolerate because of their immigration status. And in some cases, these women worried a great deal that any misstep would result in deportation. We went through transportation. Now we're going to discuss some of the physical effects, emotional, mental effects, and personal relationships. These were the questions we asked them after we had asked them about the sources of stress. Across the groups, they described several physical symptoms such as insomnia and headaches. They also reported fatigue and exhaustion, which really drained their ability to desire to have fun, to take care of themselves or their family. You get depressed, you feel desperate. I mean, if I work two shifts, I get home dead tired. As a mother and a woman, you have to find time for the children. And at home, I have my husband. I have to clean my house. The women, though, did report that they suffered more from mental problems than they did from physical problems. A quarter of them had been diagnosed with depression or anxiety by their physician. So depression, irritability, anxiety, and related stress, effects of related stress. Effects on their personal relationships. Thirdly, some of the participants acknowledge the complicated interplay between work-related stress and stress in their personal lives. They reported that they often found themselves directing their stress-related anger and frustration towards those closest to them. And other participants reported that they chose to isolate themselves from others and avoid interacting with family and friends. And this was really much more of a coping strategy for them. If they removed themselves from their environment at home, they wouldn't have to take out their frustrations on their family. Okay, I just want to quickly mention some of the recommendations that the women had mentioned that would be very helpful. Assess the work environment and gather information on the stress needs of the employees. Develop discussion groups with the supervisors. The women really wished for support groups, a chance to talk and vent through their problems. Train supervisors on effective management and communication skills. Supervisors were the primary source of stress for these women, and they thought that this type of training would really help the employers and supervisors treat staff with more civility. Teaching skills and team building. The women articulated the need to learn to manage conflicts that emerge at work, especially due to their limited English skills. So they thought that with better communication with problematic workers and supervisors, they hoped to really improve their situation. Develop programs to reward and acknowledge employees. Everyone likes to feel appreciated. These women are no different. Implement employee assistance programs. We're talking about offering counseling benefits, information on work-life problems, and advice regarding health and career advancement. Develop a worksite mentoring system, connecting workers with organized advocacy groups that really can provide information about fair labor practices and advice on their legal rights as workers. Re-examine the corporate mission statement. Get the employers to really recognize and comprehend their managerial role in the perpetuation of job stress. Develop and support work policies that promote a healthy work environment. Create a workshop on relaxation techniques or include an exercise program. Develop and work policies that recognize family obligations was very important to them. And lastly, really celebrate the diversity of the workforce and ways to continue and increase ingenuity through the exchange of unique cultural experiences. Now, although addressing personal health behaviors we found to be very important, the overall environment and supports in the workplace also need to be examined and addressed. So what we're really talking about is an integrated approach, drawing from the individual's coping strategies and the organization's approaches and culture as well. Thank you.
And with 1 minute to spare, so if there's a specific question about Mariella's presentation, yeah, Dean.
Yeah, not to get too complicated, but in your focus groups, in terms of how you can frame the question.
In terms of construction statistics?
Construction statistics about immigrant workers regarding permanent disabled disabilities.
Yeah.
Permanent injuries about permanent disabilities.
Do you have that on hand, Don?
I'm Don Lindberg with CPWR. I do not know the answer to your question. However, we do have that information. You can get it on our website, cpwr.com. We do use the construction chart book. Compilation of all the research. You can buy it from us for a nominal fee of $15, or you can download it free. And I'm sure that the answer is there. I just don't know, but I suspect
there have been general, I mean, I don't know about the construction in particular, but there have been general studies that document higher injury rate among immigrant workers. The problem with injuries is that there's also a lot of underreporting. Fatalities are sort of, you know, they're there. Whereas injuries, there's a lot of underreporting among immigrant workers.
Okay, thank you.